This man who?
This man who?
Mom unto me. Atitim, who being an uninvited guest, Ayatam, had come here. Atitina, with the reception of a guest. Nimantriya, after inviting me. Cha, also. Adatva, without giving food. Bhukpavan has himself eaten. Tashyat of him. Sadyaha, immediately. Te of you. Darshaye, I shall show. Holam, the result. So translation, Maharaj Ambarish, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you. You repeat, Maharaj Ambarish. You've invited me to eat as a guest. But instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. A devotee cannot be defeated by a so-called mystic yogi. This will be proved by the failure of Dharasa Muni's endeavor to chastise Maharaja Ambarisha. Aravavaktasya kuto mahagunaha. That's from the Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 18th chapter, text 12. One who is not a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord has no good qualifications, however great a mystic, philosopher, or fruit of worker he may be. Only a devotee emerges victorious in all circumstances, as will be shown in this incident involving the rivalry between Dharasa and Maharaja Ambarisha. So, Yomam Adityamayatam Atityena Nimantriacha Adatwa Bhuktavam Stasya Sajaste Darshaye Palam. So, Om Gana Tadavandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshul Miritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Several interesting things are happening in this verse, and of course the purport. Yomam Atitim. So, in Sanskrit, also in Hindi, you have this word tithi, which means like either an appointment or a specific time, just like we have, what is the tithi today or tithi tomorrow? That's the, tomorrow's Christmas, of course, according to the Western calendar. So that would be the tithi, tomorrow. It's either an appointment or a date. Just like you'd say to someone in America, the same sort of expression is used, what's today's date? Or let's make a date, if you're romantic. Okay? Yeah. Let's have a date, sweetie, or something. So it's so this is what it means. But atithi means basically not having a date. It doesn't mean you're lonely because you don't have a date. It means that someone basically shows up at your door and they don't have an appointment. And according to the Vedic culture, there's another expression, Atithi Narayana. That means someone who shows up at your door without an appointment, without a date, they're to be treated like God. It's interesting. And actually, that's a conjunction for householders. Of course, generally, the householders are supposed to feed, call out, you know, three times before they eat, and feed anybody who comes. Of course, in America, probably nobody would come. Unless you happen to be situated in the Bowery in New York, and you get a whole bunch of people coming. So, there's a culture of hospitality. And I was just listening to, as I'm generally listening to Prabhupada memories, or the memories that devotees have in regard to Srila Prabhupada. And one of Prabhupada's servants suggested to Prabhupada that, we shouldn't allow people just to come at any time. And Prabhupada was very open. And of course he said, no, let people come at any time. And he was such a good host. There's another story that I heard last night, that there was a man who came to see Prabhupada. It was in some place in America. He came to see Prabhupada, and what he did is he just like stared at Prabhupada for like an hour. And Prabhupada just preached him, treated him nicely, treated him like a guest. And when he left, Prabhupada said, he's ghostly haunted. But still, Prabhupada treated him nicely. Another instance was when the devotees brought this professor in that challenged Prabhupada. And then, described the devotees started to chastise the professor because he was actually offensive to Prabhupada. But Prabhupada always acted like a perfect gentleman in receiving someone. So it's a very important item of Vedic culture to take care of guests. And then there's punishments for those who don't take care of guests that are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. For example, if someone stares at the guest, why is he eating too much? With unblinking eyes. That's when I just stare with unblinking eyes. That means with a bad face. Then you get these nice vultures of hell that when you go there, they get to pluck your eyeballs out continually. So it is important to take care of guests. And Maharaj Ambarish was not at all deficient, defective, or negligent in this particular regard. So, but Durvasa Muni is apparently misunderstanding, or because he's hungry, misunderstanding Maharaj Ambarish's behavior, or he's just plain old agitated and unable to understand Maharaj Ambarish's behavior. But actually, those two things are not true. He is actually a devotee of the Lord, too, although previously described he was meditating on Brahman, and he was very hungry, and he's getting angry. We should understand that he is a partial expansion of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva Vaishnavanam, Yatha Shambhu, that Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee. So we can also understand that Durvasa Muni is a great devotee of the Lord, and the Lord is using him under the influence of what's called Yoga Maya to carry out a particular path and to glorify the devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see this sometimes, that even with this Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha story, there's even cursing going on in the spiritual world, isn't it? Radharani's cursing as a ball, comes down the material world. It's just like, what's happening? So the Lord's specific pastimes or specific lessons can be learned. In the Bhagavad Gita also we have something that's very similar. That Arjuna appears to forget his duty. He appears to be filled with fear, or he's worried about his family members, like that. And it's all yogamaya, so the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. So here, this is brought up in the Sanskrit. And I'm going to do a little analysis here. The second part of the Sanskrit. Adatva vukta vams tasya. So here Prabhupada translates it as, without giving food, he himself has eaten of him. And actually, another way of understanding that, and this is not just because I'm not a Sanskrit expert, so this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is very expert in reading between the lines in these particular verses and seeing, we actually read about this in the previous verse too, how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur interpreted words to mean that although Maharaj Ambarish was such an opulent king, this is the purport of the, he was not mad after money. So it appears that it's an insult. But what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is actually saying here, that Durvasa Muni is saying between the lines, that Maharaj Ambarish has, without taking food, he has eaten. In other words, he's appreciating how Maharaj Ambarish has broken the fast and not broken the fast simultaneously. So there's some appreciation there between the lines. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in analyzing this particular verse, says that that Maharaj Durvasa Muni is actually saying that I'm going to show something to glorify Maharaj Ambarish. It's interesting. He's getting this from the Sanskrit here, and this is something that's let's say it's a common thing. Well, not so common, but it's something that keeps occurring in different places, even when someone who is not a devotee, like Shishupal, is blaspheming the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The blasphemy, in many cases, is turned into praise by the analysis of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And I'm going to read something that's really interesting of how Krishna one time was blaspheming himself and denigrating himself. Not so much blasphemy. He's denigrating himself in his interactions with his wife, Rukmini. And while he was doing that, he was actually glorifying himself, and Rukmini points that out. Rather than Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur pointing out, Rukmini is pointing out in this particular case. This is from the 10th Canto, chapter 60 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so this is the case where Krishna is attempting to draw the ire of Rukmini. In other words, get her angry. And of course, we see in this particular chapter that Krishna is unable to get her angry. Instead, she faints, but this is part of the story. So Krishna starts in the 10th verse here of this chapter. He says, "My dear princess, you were sought after by many kings as powerful as the rulers of planets. They were all abundantly endowed with political influence, wealth, beauty, generosity, and physical strength." So this is Krishna's introduction to this particular portion, that, you know, he's glorifying all these kings, you know, especially people like Shishupal and others who were his enemies. "Since your brother and father offered you to them, why did you reject the king of Chedi and all those other suitors who stood before you maddened by Cupid? Why instead did you choose us who are not at all your equal?" It's interesting, Krishna uses the plural, which Srila Prabhupada actually uses sometimes too. And devotees use it. Sometimes people get confused. Because the other day I told a devotee, you know, I said, "We just came back from New Orleans." And the devotee said, "That's like a royal us. You know, it's a royal us." So devotees do that, and people in America get confused when they say that. Because I said, "We just came back from New Orleans." And the devotee said, "Who's with you?" I said, "No, just we." That's a royal we. So anyway, Krishna's criticized. He says, "I," he's using the royal us, "are not your equal." And then Krishna says, "I'm terrified of these kings." In other words, Krishna said, "I was terrified of the kings." You know, Krishna's criticizing himself. He said, "We," "took shelter in the ocean. We have become the," and that's, of course, Dwarka. And Krishna's referring to Krishna's. And, of course, that's his famous pastime of Ranchorji, where Krishna appears to be a coward. But he actually is exhibiting his opulence of renunciation. Because as a Kshatriya would never run away from the battle, right? I mean, come on, a Kshatriya would prefer to die rather than run away. So Krishna showed he was renounced even from the prestige of being a fighter, a Kshatriya, or heroic, and he runs away. He says, and we have practically abandoned our royal throne. So he ran away from Dwarka. Oh, fine, proud lady, women are usually destined to suffer when they stay with men whose behavior is uncertain and to pursue a path not approved by society. So he's saying, my behavior is uncertain and I pursued a path not pursued by society. We have no material possessions and we are dear to those who similarly have nothing. Therefore, O slender one, the wealthy hardly ever worship me. And he was all indirect praise. And actually, Prabhupada points that out, and actually a lot of this is coming from Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, like Prabhupada says, like the Lord, his devotees are uninterested in material sense gratification, being awakened to the superior pleasure of Krishna consciousness. Actually, I should comment about this superior pleasure. Actually, I was reading a psychologist about, you know, the pleasure of spiritual life. It was Maslow. Interesting. He said that some people are simply interested in spiritual life. This is an interesting thing. In the peak experiences of spiritual life. And he says this is not actually a stable. Of course, he's not talking about religion with a big R, he's talking about religion with a small R. He makes that distinction. He said this is not actually a stable position. You know, like people just running around from one festival to another. He says, he talks about one should be situated on an elevated plateau. In other words, a constant in spiritual life. Because if one is simply looking for those peak experiences, there's several problems with that. First of all, he said, inevitably they become very self-centered because they're thinking of themselves. Really, really good insight the psychologist has. And then, in addition to that, that they'll need more and more peak experiences. You know, it's not going to satisfy. Like you have to increase the dose of some drug, isn't it? You know, so like if you're taking heroin or something like that. Very interesting. I mean, you'll find sometimes these he definitely was a materialist too. You know, I'm not denying that. But they have some insights into spiritual experiences that we can apply in understanding Krishna consciousness. Anyway, apart from that, let's continue reading here. Marriage and friendship are proper between two people who are equal in terms of their wealth, birth, implements, physical appearance, and capacity for good progeny. But never between a superior and inferior. So Krishna's calling himself an inferior. And then Krishna says, oh, Vaidarbhi, not being farsighted, you didn't realize this, and therefore you chose us as your husband, even though we have no good qualities and are glorified only by deluded beggars. Now you should definitely accept a more suitable husband. He's suggesting a divorce here, you know, which is definitely Vedic. A first-class man of the royal order could help you achieve everything you want, both in this life and the next. Kings like Shishupal, Salva, Janasanda, and Dandavakra all hate me, oh beautiful thigh one. And so does your elder brother, Rukmi. I guess this is before Rukmi was killed by Balaram. It was to dispel the arrogance of these kings that I carried away my good women, for they were blinded by the intoxication of power. My purpose was to curb the strength of the wicked. We care nothing for wives, children, and wealth, always satisfied within ourselves. We do not work for the body and home, but like a light we merely witness. And, you know, Rukmini basically at this point had heard, I'm just summarizing, these unpleasantries, what she considered to be unpleasantries from her husband. And basically she became overwhelmed with unhappiness, thinking that Krishna was going to leave her and suggesting that she should get married again. She fainted. And when she fainted, Krishna had to manifest four arms to pick her up. And then
Krishna just explains to her, I actually wanted to see you get angry, but, you know, I was unsuccessful in that endeavor. Then Rukmini actually explains how Krishna was glorifying himself. She says, yes, my Lord Urukram, this is the 35th verse of the chapter, you lay down within the ocean as if afraid of the material modes, and thus in pure consciousness you appear within the heart of the Supersoul. You are always battling against the foolish material senses, and indeed, even your servants reject the privilege of royal dominion, which leads to the blindness of ignorance. Your movements, inscrutable even for the sages who relish the honey of your lotus feet, are certainly incomprehensible for human beings who behave like animals. And just like your activities are transcendental, all-powerful Lord, so too are those of your followers. You possess nothing because there is nothing beyond you. So she's turning his words around and showing us actually Krishna's praising himself. Even the great enjoyers of tribute, Brahma and the other demigods, pay tribute to you. Those who are blinded by their wealth and absorbed in gratifying their senses do not recognize you. That's like Janmaishwarya Shrutasya Shivir, Enamana Adalpuman, that's being come to praise, in the form of death. But to the gods, the enjoyers of tribute, you are the most dear as they are to you. You are the embodiment of all human goals and are yourself the final aim of life. Desiring to attain you, O all-powerful Lord, intelligent persons abandon everything else. It is they who are worthy of your association, not men and women absorbed in the pleasure and grief resulting from their mutual lust. Knowing that, great sages who have renounced the sannyasi's danda, that's interesting here. Knowing that, great sages who have renounced the sannyasi's danda proclaim your glories. It's interesting. Renouncing the sannyasi. Because this sannyasi's danda is a sign of prestige. One time, Tamal Krishna Maharaj was speaking that one time he forgot to bring his danda in Mayapur, and they just treated him like a regular, you know, everyone was pushing him around. So he was lamenting that he forgot his danda that particular day. Because of, it's interesting, like if you walk around in Mayapur with a danda, like people respect you, they don't push you around during Mangal Arati. But if you walk around without it, not even though you're the same person, they push you. I've experienced that. That you are the Supreme Soul, and that you are so gracious that you give away even your own self. I chose you as my husband, rejecting Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the rulers of heaven, whose aspirations are all frustrated by the force of time, which is born from your eyebrows. What interest, then, could I have in other suitors? My Lord is a lion, drives away lesser animals to claim his proper tribute. You drove off the assembled kings with the resounding twang of their shanga bowl, and then claimed me your fair share. Thus, it is sheer foolishness, my dear Gadagraja, for you to say you took shelter in the ocean out of fear of those kings. So, she's even saying that it is foolish for you to say that. Isn't that amazing? I mean, you talk about, we're going to be talking about this this evening to a certain extent. The Vedic system, the wife shouldn't talk back to the husband. She's saying, this is a sheer foolishness. Let me check this Sanskrit word. Actually, Prabhupada, Jadyam, which means your words are foolish. Janyam vachastava vachat. Yeah. Janyam vachastava means your words, tava. Vachas means words. Janyam are just foolish. Wanting your association, the best of kings, Angavainya, Jayanta, Nahusha, Gaya, and others abandon their absolute sovereignty and enter the forest to seek you out. How could those kings suffer frustration in the world? The aroma of your lotus feet, which is glorified by great saints, awards people liberation and is the abode of the goddess Lakshmi. What woman would take shelter of any other man after savoring that aroma? Since you are the abode of transcendental qualities, what mortal woman with the insight to distinguish her own true interests would disregard that fragrance and depend instead on someone who is always subject to fear? Because you are suitable for me, I have chosen you, the master and supreme soul of all the worlds, who fulfill our desires in this life and in the next. May your feet, which give freedom from illusion by approaching their worshiper, give shelter to me, who have been wandering from one material situation to another. O infallible Krishna, let each of the kings you name become the husband of a woman whose ears have never heard your glories. which are sung in the assemblies of Shiva and Brahma. After all, in the households of such women, these kings live like asses, oxen, dogs, cats, and slaves. This is beautiful. These are beautiful words of Rukmini, isn't it? A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, head hair, and body hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and air. This is really intense preaching, isn't it? Boy, these statements of Rukmini are just like, she's so relishable. You see how intelligent she is? We're going to be speaking about that this afternoon, you know, that intelligent women in Vedic culture. And then, O lotus-eyed, although you were satisfied within yourself and thus rarely turn your attention toward me, because he said, you know, I'm not interested in wives or children, please bless me with steady love for your feet. It is when you assume a predominance of passion in order to manifest the universe that you glance upon me, showing me what is indeed your greatest mercy. Actually, I don't consider your words false, Madhusudan. Quite often, an unmarried girl is attracted to a man, or in the case of Amba, the mind of a promiscuous woman always hankers for new lovers, even if she is married. An intelligent man should not keep such an unchaste wife, for if he does, he will lose his good fortune both in this life and the next. The Supreme Lord said, O saintly lady, O princess, we deceived you only because we wanted to hear you speak like this. Indeed, everything you said in reply to my words is certainly true. Whatever benedictions you hope for in order to become free from material desires are ever yours, O fair and noble lady, for you are my unalloyed devotee. O sinless one, I have now seen firsthand the pure love and chaste attachment you have for your husband. Even though shaken by my words, your mind could not be pulled away from me. Beautiful, isn't it? So, anyway, so this is what's happening here. Durvasa Muni under Yogamaya is actually glorifying Maharaj Ambarish, and that's pointed out by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and you see in his pastime later on, the whole pastime glorifies Maharaj Ambarish. So you may ask, why does the Lord subject the devotee to all this difficulty, being attacked by this demon which you can read about, that was created by Durvasa Muni, to glorify? And Prabhupada said that without opposition, because Prabhupada was asked one time, why are there so many problems, you know, opposition, you know, challenges. And Prabhupada said, without opposition, where's the chance for glorious victory? You see, in Prabhupada's pastimes too, this Prabhupada had to confront so much opposition, this opposition, you know, being gored by a bull, the heart attacks and everything like that. And of course, we talked about Prabhupada yesterday, disease, condition of the body, in so many ways, that this was all Krishna's arrangement to glorify Srila Prabhupada, to glorify Srila Prabhupada's determination, and that we were talking about one-pointedness and dedication to his spiritual master, and to teach us a lesson, and a lesson which we dwelled on yesterday, you know, that Yasha Prasada Bhagavad Prasada, Yasha Prasada Nandati Topi, and Giva Sayatma Gabudhya, A.K.A. Ha Kudananda. So, any questions or comments about this voice? We've got 3 more minutes. Any questions, comments? As you can see, there's so much nectar in the Bhagavatam. You know, in the prayers, and sometimes we're going to say we just skip the prayers, but the prayers are actually nectarian. Yeah.
Well, how do I
what?
How do you divide the word into syllables? Changing the meaning of
it. Yeah, how you divide into syllables.
And so, like Rupa Goswami, that's all these plain words. By saying one thing which means something else, which also means something else, which means something else. And so they're having a great time expressing so many things that are sometimes apparently contradictory just by how you manipulate the grammar.
Yeah. I mean, it's wonderful. Like in the Nectar Devotion, there's that example, like Radharani is saying to Krishna, where is your dress? And, you know, Krishna takes it in a different way. How did Krishna take it exactly? You know? And then she says, where did you spend the night? And it was like, do you think the night kidnapped me? You know, there's all sorts of different ways that you can understand things, especially in the... But Vidagdha Madhava, you see all these double or triple meanings of expressions. You know, how you break up the word, and how you, whether you accent certain syllables in the word, it just changes everything. Sanskrit is actually very precise, how it's pronounced. English is not precise. We have so many different pronunciations of the same word, and even the same word, you pronounce it a different way, it means something completely different. Yeah? Yes?
I was thinking it was... I was just reflecting on what's interesting during with me speak so strongly, because I was thinking about, like, when we hear about in Krishna's pastimes, when Rukmini is Chandravali, how she's, like, always just smiles when Krishna says something and never rebukes him. So I was thinking that it's interesting to see in the pastime of the palace,
so
she speaks out strongly to Krishna.
Yeah, she does get angry as Chandravali. But as Lord Chaitanya explained, there's three types of jealous women. This is in the story of the Lakshmi Vijay, who is attacking Lord Jagannath because he's gone to Vrindavan. She is actually also jealous. There's restless, you know, those that really like let the man have it. There's mixed, which is sarcastic, you know, Jewish, and then there's the people who are peaceful. You know, they just don't show it at all. You know, they show it in their facial expression. So. But Chandravali definitely gets jealous and gets angry, and sometimes it comes out.